Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us on this Monday, September the 3rd, Labor Day 2007. And on this Labor Day, as we have for most Labor Days in the recent past, we are welcoming in David Newby of Wisconsin's AFL-CIO to talk about the state of labor, the situation for workers in the state, and we'll talk about why health care is a top issue for the AFL-CIO and for working people in general. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your participation in our annual Labor Day program with David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be here. And by the way, this is year 26, believe it or not.
I was going to ask you. I didn't have the years? 26 years you've been doing this. And what's it like here, the 26th year of talking with the state of Wisconsin about the state of labor? How's it going?
Well, you know, Joy, in looking back over the last 26 years, unfortunately, there have not been many years in which the message was particularly encouraging. And this Labor Day is not as bad as some. It's a very mixed message, which I think we have from the economy and the state of working people today. In Wisconsin, we have had some growth in jobs, and yet the participation rate in our economy, the percentage of people who are actually working, is down a bit, as it is nationally. Manufacturing has become more or less stable, but we continue to see plant closings and production shipped to Mexico and increasingly to China. And the challenges to our industrial sector are absolutely immense due to unfair international competition. Unemployment is up just a tiny bit, but the worst part of our unemployment situation, I think, is the racial disparities that minorities are just being hit brutally by unemployment in Wisconsin, as they are in the country. But it's really worse in Wisconsin. Our real wages, if you look back over the last 5 or 6 years, what our actual incomes, our paychecks will buy after inflation, are a bit lower. And even though the overall poverty rate is down a bit in the state, it's up in some key areas, especially in Milwaukee and the Fox Valley. Overall, in terms of the national economy, I think the most disturbing thing, and again, this is not something that's happened just in the past year, but it goes back for a couple of decades, and that is that while productivity, in other words, the amount of value that any worker creates in 1 hour, has continued to go up at a very rapid pace, workers themselves have not gotten the benefits of that increased productivity, that their wages since the mid-70s have basically, once you adjust for inflation, have not changed hardly at all, in spite of the fact that each worker is producing more value. And essentially, the additional value that's been created has been all shifted upwards to the top 5% and especially the richest 1% in our society. The good news, I think, is that is the issue that you mentioned, and that's the issue of health care, that finally we're beginning to make some very substantial progress, especially here in Wisconsin, but nationally as well, in moving effectively towards ensuring and guaranteeing that everybody in this state and this country has access to comprehensive and quality health care for themselves and their families.
I was looking at your Labor Day article, and it does deal with the health care situation. Are you optimistic that this Healthy Wisconsin, Your Choice, Your Plan program proposed by Senate Democrats is going to happen?
Well, I think it will. Is it going to happen this session, meaning this year or next? That's very much up in the air. But Healthy Wisconsin is actually an amalgamation of three universal plans that have been discussed for a number of years. One of the plans is a state-level single-payer plan like Canada's that the AFL-CIO helped to develop back in the late 80s and early 90s. And it's a plan we still support. We think it's the ultimate answer to our difficulties with health care. The second plan is one that was developed by David Reamer, the former budget director for Governor Doyle, called the Wisconsin Health Plan. it's a little bit too complicated for me to explain, but, you know, a good universal health care plan. And the third was the Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan, one that the AFL-CIO has been developing going back to 2000, 2001. And essentially what happened was that for the last couple of years, representatives from those three plans have been cooperating in town hall forums all over the state, presenting those three plans to the public at large, sponsored by local churches and Rotary clubs and community groups of various sorts, and essentially trying to raise the awareness just of how serious our healthcare crisis is, number one, and number two, demonstrating that there are at least three viable ways of solving that problem. And I think a lot of the inaction we've had on the healthcare issue in the past has been that people have sort of thrown up their hands and say, well, what can we do? You know, there's just nothing, we're powerless to do anything. And so those town hall forums, and we had probably well over 150 of them in the course of about a year and a half and 2 years. And that, I think, has helped to develop the notion around the state that, yes, we can do something about health care. What happened then was that the Senate Democrats, or those who were running for office as Democrats in the Senate, especially also in the Assembly, but especially the Senate, took up the issue of universal health care last year before the elections, and essentially they all ran on a common platform of passing universal health care in Wisconsin if they were in the majority. So they came to the leaders of the three plans after the elections, after they won a majority in the Senate last November, and said, look, we don't want to choose between these plans. These guys get into an office together. And we want you to be talking to John Erpenbach, Senator Erpenbach, who is the chair of the Senate Health Committee, come up with a unified, agreed-upon plan that you can all support and that we can support, and we'll put it in the budget. And that's exactly what they did. And it turns out to be, I think, an excellent plan. It's one which will give very comprehensive and affordable and quality-driven coverage to every single person in the state. And it'll cost less than we're paying today. Healthcare.
You might have just answered our first caller's question, but I'm going to bring Dan on anyway. Dan in Partyville.
Mr. Newby. Mm-hmm.
Yes, good morning. Happy Labor Day.
Now, the Democrats came up with a very well thought out plan to cover everybody in Wisconsin. It saves, even by conservative estimates, $2.5 billion,
yep,
less than what we're paying for health care now. Why are the Republicans opposing this? Would you please explain? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I can't speak for the Republicans. And there, you know, there are a couple of them who do support Healthy Wisconsin, do support universal health care. Essentially, they are, what they say at least, is that they are so tied to a free market model of providing anything. They want to see government shrunken rather than have a larger role in our society. And so they've come up with these schemes for health savings accounts so that we can save money to pay for our own health care, which is no solution whatsoever. And I think that they simply have not owned up to the fact that, as every other country has realized, that the provision of health care is best done in a coordinated fashion in which we all share risk. And that means that none of us really knows what kind of health care needs we're going to need tomorrow. We may be perfectly healthy today, and tomorrow we may be hit by a car, have a serious automobile accident. We may find out that we have cancer and have medical situations which are way beyond our individual financial means to deal with. And so health care, like education, is a social responsibility and is much more rationally, effectively, and efficiently provided if we pool our resources and make sure that everyone has access to the health care that they need. Republicans eventually are simply going to have to come to the realization that this is the only effective way that we can provide good health care for everybody.
Yeah, and you say it's unfortunate that this has become a partisan issue, but you also are saying that you too will make it a campaign issue in the 2008 elections locally and nationally.
Absolutely. Now, I should say that the Wisconsin Health Plan that was introduced last year did have bipartisan support from Republican Kurt Gelo and Democrat John Richards in the Assembly. The FL-CIO's Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan also had bipartisan sponsorship from Senator Russ Decker, Democrat, and Republican Terry Musser in the Assembly. So, you know, it's not quite, you know, an absolute partisan issue, but overwhelmingly it is. And we think that, number one, it was evident that the Democrats in the Senate and a lot of Democrats who were running for the Assembly were running on the health care issue, and they won on that issue. That was the key reason that Democrats were able to regain a majority in the Senate, and that Democrats picked up 8 seats in the Assembly. So we think that that's going to be the determining issue next year as well. And it's a situation where, since Senate Democrats voted to put Healthy Wisconsin into the budget and Assembly Republicans said, no, we're going to take it out, a Democrat running for the Assembly, for example, can go to the door and say, look, my colleague in the Senate voted to guarantee that you and your family would have the very best quality-driven comprehensive health care, and the person I'm running against in the Assembly voted to take that away from you. That's a very powerful message. And you can throw in there that Healthy Wisconsin also includes about $500-600 million in property tax cuts, because we save so much money in the public sector in cutting the cost of comprehensive health care for public employees.
We're talking this hour with David Newby. He is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and he talks with us every Labor Day at this time. He just reminded us it's his 26th year talking with you on Labor Day morning about issues that matter to working people here in the state of Wisconsin, focusing in some on the health care issue as one of those. What about you? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions and views for David Newby. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up a little later today, Gene Purcell in for Ben Marins on this Labor Day. After 4 o'clock, how satisfied are Americans with their job? According to Gene's guest, after 4 o'clock, most people are very satisfied with what they do for a living and with the flexibility of their hours. We'll wonder if you agree with that or not after 4 o'clock. And then talking more about what Labor Day means to you after 5 o'clock, talking about the history of Labor Day with his guest after 5. So lots of Labor Day-related programming coming your way all day long here on the Ideas Network, including this hour. We are talking with David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, about issues that matter to working people, the state of labor during 2007. We were talking about health care being the top issue for labor this year and in the upcoming elections. We talked about the state situation, David Newby, but on the national scene, there's work going on with universal health care as well?
Absolutely. In fact, today, Labor Day, is the launch date for a national AFL-CIO, a national labor push to institute universal health care on the national level. This is a very serious program that the labor movement is going to be putting many, many resources and organizing energy into over the next couple of years. It'll be one of the two or three issues that we organize around for the federal elections coming up in November of 2008. And the intent is to, once again, as we are in Wisconsin, making this the key issue around which we organize and around which we judge candidates and hold them accountable. Hopefully, it'll be the issue that gives us the majority in Congress, in both the Senate and the House, that is favorable towards a universal health care plan for the United States, and that we can actually institute that in a couple of years. It's a very, very ambitious agenda. It's probably going to take a little longer than that. But it is issue number one, not only here in Wisconsin for the labor movement, but nationally.
Yeah, I saw some new national figures. 47 million Americans now have no health care coverage at all.
That's right. Yeah. And it's absolutely barbaric. I mean, every other advanced industrialized country in the world has guaranteed health care for all of their residents. And by the way, they only pay about half as much per person for health care as we do. and yet their health care outcomes are far, far better than ours. We are now rated by the United Nations World Health Organization 37th in the world. I think we're now between Slovenia and Cuba in terms of the outcomes of our health care system, the health of our population, how long people live, the infant mortality rate, all those kinds of measures. We simply don't stack up, and yet we're paying twice as much as anybody else. It doesn't make sense.
Jim in Black River Falls wants to talk about the state health care, universal health care plan. Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm wondering if Wisconsin were to adopt Healthy Wisconsin and the country fail to have a federal plan, what would what protections do we have in Wisconsin to keep people moving into the state to avail themselves of our plan, perhaps unemployed people and so on? That's my question.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good question. And we are aware that there are potentials that, you know, there are difficulties in having a state-level universal system. We have problems that you have to figure out the answers to that you don't on the national level. Although the question is, you know, why isn't everybody moving to Canada in order to take, you know, advantage of their system? However, the way our system works is that if you are not employed and don't have any income, you have to live in the state of Wisconsin for 12 months before you're eligible for Healthy Wisconsin. If you work, you are covered from day one because you are paying – Healthy Wisconsin is paid for by a payroll tax. It's paid by both by employers and by workers, by employees. And so if you are employed, you're automatically paying for Healthy Wisconsin, and so you're covered. The second thing is that we think that Healthy Wisconsin can be the most powerful economic development tool that the state of Wisconsin has ever had, because it means that for any firm that is paying decent wages and is paying today for decent benefits, both health care and pension, that their costs for health care are going to be cut dramatically. And that means that it's going to be less expensive for them to operate in Wisconsin than it is in other states. It means that if they're already here in Wisconsin, the incentive is for them to expand and to stay in the state of Wisconsin. For firms that are looking to move, that Wisconsin can be the place that has the best health care in the entire country, and yet it costs them less as an employer. So it has all the right incentives for bringing good family-supporting jobs into the state, and at the same time making sure that our population has access to the best health care in the entire country.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. A lot of criticism, or that I hear critics say, is that we don't need big government running our health care system. Is that what happens with Healthy Wisconsin?
No, it's not. It's a system by which essentially we rearrange the funding, how we pay for health care, and at the same time making sure that everybody equally has access to it. We don't disrupt the way health care is provided. And in fact, without going into a lot of detail, essentially Healthy Wisconsin is organized very similar to the way that the state employee health insurance plan is handled today. And that is that health organizations, which we call networks, which means that any integrated health care system, which includes at least one hospital, clinics, primary care physicians, as well as specialists, puts in a per capita bid for providing health care, comprehensive health care, the same benefit package that you have, Joy, that the governor has, that the legislators have, that we're paying for. It's that very same, very good benefit package. They put in a bid, and essentially those bids are categorized into two levels. The first level is the lower cost, higher quality set of plans. The other is the higher cost and presumably lesser quality. Everyone chooses a network or a statewide fee-for-service plan, if that's their choice or if that's the only choice that they have in their particular part of the state. And they pay nothing beyond the payroll tax, with the exception of some deductibles and copays, for access to that network. And that in the Madison area, that would mean Dean Care, for example, UW Hospital, mm-hmm. up in Eau Claire, Group Health in Wisconsin, in the northern part of the state, Marshfield, Gunderson down in La Crosse, and so forth. Already established networks that simply are going to be paid and guaranteed that they're going to get paid for the services that they provide at the bid level that they put in. So what we do is essentially rationalize the healthcare delivery system and encourage the organization of healthcare in a much more rational way. And we also, and the reason that we can provide better benefits for more people is that we eliminate all of the unnecessary bureaucracy and administration that we have in our current system. In the United States as a whole, and generally in Wisconsin, we're paying almost 30% of every healthcare dollar simply for administration. You look at any other system in the world, and they're paying far less than 10%. So we've got all that overhead that isn't providing us any healthcare at all, but is putting healthcare out of the economic reach of many of our citizens. We get rid of that overhead and use that money for healthcare.
We're talking with David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, spending much of her time here talking about why healthcare is the number one issue for labor. And we're opening it up, though, to other issues as well. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. David Newby talking with us, as he always does on Labor Day, about his Labor Day message for the state of Wisconsin. John in Oregon is with us. Hi, you're on the air. John, can you come to the phone?
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
I just want to say that censorship of any kind is abominable.
Well, John, that's not what we're talking about today, so thanks for the call. I'm not sure why you're bringing up censorship when we're talking to David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Could be that it's someone who called back. We did screen out a call, David Newby, of somebody who wanted to really take issue with you personally, and it is our policy not to have callers personally attack guests. You can ask a tough question and disagree with an issue or a policy, but do not personally attack a guest.
Have him call me at my office.
Yeah, there we go. And I think that's what we had going on right now. And just to bring up the issue, talking about the Milwaukee being the eighth poorest city in America and the high poverty rate in Milwaukee, you brought that up as a concern in your opening remarks, but what can labor unions do about that?
We've been doing a lot, and labor really has been the leader in terms of developing training programs in Milwaukee so that we can raise the skill level of the working population in Milwaukee and try to bring everyone into the mainstream. Probably the most successful of these projects has been the work on the Marquette Interchange, a huge highway construction program in which labor cooperated both with the government and contractors in order to expand the training programs that unions already had in place that were targeted towards minority populations. And actually, the goals for hiring both minorities and women have not only been met, they've been exceeded. And we're hoping that this is going to pay off in the coming years. But still, there needs to be so much more that's done. The Milwaukee school system is being starved of resources. It needs more resources than most other communities simply because of the poverty of the population in the inner city of Milwaukee. So we need to be putting more resources into those public structures in Milwaukee. Transportation has a considerable amount to do with it as well, because what has happened with the hollowing out of the economy of the central city of Milwaukee with the decline in its industrial base is that the jobs are not where people live. They're not where the people who need jobs live. And in many cases, they simply don't have the transportation to get to the jobs that are available. So we've got to do something about the transportation system. But essentially, it's a matter of our investing, as not only from the resources within the city and county of Milwaukee, but statewide. We need to invest in Milwaukee to make sure that it becomes more prosperous, that people have work, and that it becomes what it should be, and that is the economic driving engine for the entire state.
Mm. Let me ask you about another issue. We do have some callers who still want to talk about health care, which is great, but I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Governor Doyle is taking a trip to China, a trade mission. Does that bother you?
No. I mean, the intent of his trip is in order to increase the exports from Wisconsin to China and to further develop our markets there. And certainly that is sorely needed. Mm-hmm. We have an absolutely unsustainable economic deficit with China. It's our overall trade deficit is well over $700 billion a year. Almost $200 billion of that is with China. And we simply can't sustain those kinds of deficits very much longer, because it means that not only our trade deficit, but also it affects our overall budget deficit. But when we are borrowing money, essentially, from outside of the United States, there has to be some compensating way that other countries are getting money coming out of the United States into their country. So what is happening is that the level of direct foreign investment in the United States, of foreign corporations buying American corporations and American assets, is going up. They're also, they are the largest buyer of U.S. Treasury bonds that finance our budget deficit. So we're becoming a debtor nation. We are a debtor nation. We are spending more, and we are bringing in more goods than we are exporting. It's undermining our economy, and eventually it's going to catch up with us.
Jennifer in Ontario joins us next. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi. Back to the health care issue, although I do feel that what he was just speaking about probably is part of the reason why we have such a health care issue in the first place, is the fact that we're importing so much that we used to supply here for ourselves in the United States, and thus our jobs are down and companies can't afford to pay for health care. But my health care issue was, if we go to a government-based type of insurance, like, say, we have CompCare in Wisconsin now, and I know, because I work in healthcare, that private pay people and private insurance pay, like, their entire bill, where the state reimburses maybe if you're lucky, 20% to these organizations, to hospitals, to clinics. How are we going to keep our clinics running when they're only being reimbursed at 20% of what it's taking them to care for us and provide the services and the materials that we need? If they're only getting reimbursed 20%, they're never going to be able to make it. And yet I don't think that it's fair at the present way, because private pay people and private insurance people are paying full price, and people who are depending upon the state for their insurance, they're getting the same thing and only paying 20%, basically, is what's happening. And then it's the other people who are keeping the hospitals and clinics going. So how do we offset that if everybody's going to be paid by the state? Is the state going to come up to paying 100% like other private insurances do and private people do?
Yeah, do you know how that works, David Newby?
Yes, and the caller has identified a very deep problem with our current system and also come up with the answer, and that is that no matter who is actually paying the bill, that we pay the actual cost. One of the difficulties we have, and especially in Wisconsin, because our reimbursement rates for both Medicaid and Medicare are lower than most of the rest of the country, and it's true that healthcare professionals and clinics and hospitals are not being paid the amount necessary to fund the care that they are providing. But what happens today is that that cost simply gets shifted on to those who do have insurance, and it's one of the reasons that our insurance costs are so high. So you have to have a system in which the providers of health care are being paid fairly and adequately for the services that they provide. Under Healthy Wisconsin, first of all, it is the networks themselves that are putting in bids as to what their estimates are that it's going to actually cost them to provide comprehensive health care for the people in their geographic area. Secondly, with the fee-for-service plan, there is a provision in the statutory language which, while it doesn't go into the detail of what the actual reimbursement rates will be, it says that the Board of Trustees that runs the program has to set those rates, number one, to reward quality so that those health care providers that are giving the very best care are paid more than others. But secondly, that the rates are set so that we ensure that we are able to retain the very highest quality of health care providers in the state of Wisconsin, which means that you simply can't take it out of the hide of those who are providing care. You have to be fair in your reimbursements, and the providers of health care have to be satisfied that they are being adequately compensated, as well as simply being able to pay for the physical infrastructure of medical care. Yeah. And we also think, by the way, that when you do that, when you pay people fairly, that number one, because you're reducing the administrative cost, you're giving them more time to actually provide health care, which is what good medical professionals want to do. One of the main reasons that people are leaving the medical field is because they are hassled so much by bureaucracy. They're being called by insurance companies and HMOs and saying, you got to have prior authorization for this. Why did you do X rather than Y? And all the healthcare providers that I talk to, whether they're nurses or doctors or health nurse practitioners, they are just fed up with the current system and all the bureaucracy that they have to deal with on a daily basis. So again, pay people adequately, pay them fairly, pay them a competitive amount for the services they provide, and we will have the very best healthcare system in the entire country.
Ray and Mequon, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm a physician who is part of a very, very small freestanding practice. There's only two doctors, and we have a couple of non-physician practitioners. And we're not part of any large corporation, you know, like Affinity or Aurora or something like that. We stand by ourselves. How is Healthy Wisconsin going to affect a practice like ours in terms of administration and also in terms of reimbursement?
It's a very good question. The reimbursement rates for the fee-for-service plan would be established by the Board of Trustees on the principles that I was just talking about. But secondly, for your type of practice, there would be the necessity of some reorganization. You would, in order to essentially get business beyond the fee-for-service, the folks that have signed up for fee-for-service, you would need to have some sort of relationship with a larger network. It wouldn't necessarily mean that you have to become a part of that network, but there would have to be some sort of negotiated relationship so that someone who signs up with that network can have access to your services.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dr. Ray. One more call on some nuts and bolts for the healthcare, but let's kind of move on to some broader issues, I hope, with callers. Gary and DePere, hi, you're on the air.
Actually, I had two things. One was, do they know what the average deduction would be out of a person's paycheck for the Wisconsin healthcare system?
There was an actuarial report done, and in the actual budget amendment, or if it becomes a separate bill, the range of the payroll deduction for workers would be between 2% and 4%, up to the Social Security wage limit. In other words, the amount of your wages that is taxed for Social Security. It's about $97,500.
2% to 4%.
4% tops.
Okay.
And we figure in the budget amendment, it says 9% to 12% for employers. We figure today for 2007 that you would need about 10.5% from employers, so that you ensure that those employers today who are providing good health insurance for their workers and paying for, you know, a fair amount of that, that they actually save money under Healthy Wisconsin. Now, it's not going to stay that way. It's going to have to go up. There is sort of an automatic escalator that as wages go up, then obviously 4% and 10.5% brings in more money. But we also know that the rate of medical inflation nationally tends to run almost two times what the general inflation rate is. So if it's necessary to go beyond the limits that I just indicated, then the Board of Trustees has to go to the legislature in order to increase those amounts. However, once again, the actuarial projection is that the total cost that we pay for comprehensive health care and the rate at which that the cost for that health care increases will be less than if we simply stick with the system we have today and do nothing.
You were talking about living wages a little bit. There was a program yesterday about Southwest Airlines and the philosophy of the president. He says, I reward my employees first with decent wages. That way they treat the customers well, the customers feel good and they come back, and it all works to the bottom line. How many companies have that philosophy?
Not enough. Not enough.
No.
Yeah. We need some more enlightened management like that. And yet, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because just about all the research that has been done indicates that if workers and employees feel that they're being treated fairly, that they work harder, they're more dedicated to their job, and they do provide better service and better work. So it's a good investment for employers to treat their workers in a decent fashion. And we just wish that more did. Yeah. But that's also the function of unions, is to make sure that they do.
Thanks, Gary, for the call. We will take more calls for David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, following this short break. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn on tape today. Kathleen gets the day off on this Labor Day. Can one learn to be happy, according to Kathleen's guest after 9? Yes. She will talk with the teacher of Harvard's most popular course on how you can learn to be happy.
Yeah, that's good news.
I know. I'm going to have to take that class. We have been talking a lot about health care, other callers with other issues on their minds on this Labor Day, including George in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. And good morning to you, Mr. Newby. You do a good job.
Well, thank you very much. Happy Labor Day to you.
I'm wondering if you could tell us of the three major Democratic candidates for president, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, what they would do for labor.
Well, you know, the you may have noticed that the AFL-CIO in early August, I think it was just either August 1st or 2nd, sponsored a major debate between the candidates running for president in Chicago. There were almost 18,000 union members who jammed Soldiers Field in order to hear that debate. And every single one of them talked, number one, about the need for universal health care. They talked about changing our international trade system, changing the rules so that we have a fair system in which we've got a level playing field so that American workers can actually compete with other countries in producing goods. And they also talked about the need for improving our education system. And I think those three issues are probably the three top issues, along with rebuilding our infrastructure, our physical infrastructure, that we've been neglecting for decades, that those four issues actually are the ones that are most important to the health of our society. They're the most important for working people in general, no matter what kind of work you do. And those are the kinds of promises that they're making. I don't want to bring everything back to healthcare, but it's interesting to me, and it's very encouraging, that every single Democrat, at least, who is running for president feels compelled that they have to have a proposal for a universal health care plan. That hasn't happened before. And that, I think, is extremely encouraging, and it should be encouraging to everyone, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, that this is actually on the agenda and people are making commitments to make it happen.
Is the AFL-CIO saying this Dems plan is the best yet?
No. Our campaign is going to be around basic principles of comprehensive health care that's available to everyone, that saves money for both workers and employers. And it's after the elections in November of 2008 that we will actually endorse a particular plan. But what we're trying to do essentially is to put the focus on the issue itself and the basic principles that any plan that we support has to meet. So that's where the organizing is going to be.
Yeah,
and that's both for Republicans and Democrats. I mean, we're not just assuming this is a Democratic issue. We want Republicans to respond to this issue as effectively as Democrats.
Yeah. You know, we talked about a number of these issues so far, but we didn't talk a lot about the infrastructure. You just added that that's probably one of the most important issues facing us today. Why were you talking about, like, the bridge collapse and that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, and the reason that I had had brought that up with you earlier is that that both Katrina and the collapse of the bridge in Minneapolis, I think, have heightened our awareness that our physical infrastructure in the United States is being neglected. And when you start adding up the unmet needs in terms of road repair, of bridge repair, making sure that our dams are structurally sound. All the drinking water systems that we have, which, as we know, even in Madison, for example, are on the edge in terms of their safety. The needs that Milwaukee has, both for drinking water and for the sewage system. We're not putting the investment, the public investment necessary into our physical infrastructure that we need. And we're beginning to pay for that. And we're going to pay for it more and more, both in terms of the cost of repairing it, but also in lost lives because those systems fail. And it comes, I think, from the larger issue that for so many years, the right wing has been saying, you know, we got to cut taxes, that we need to reduce government as much as we possibly can. And that means that the outgrowth of that, the result of that, is that we're not putting the investment into our population in terms of education. We're not putting the investment into our physical infrastructure that all of us depend upon. And we have to realize that that's an infrastructure we all depend upon. And we simply have to put the money into it if we're going to have a society that works. So it goes to our larger notion of what government is all about and the realization that we're all in this together, that these are all common needs that we have and we need to pay for them in a common fashion and make sure that they are the highest quality available for everybody.
Next we go to Ed in Madison. Hi, Ed.
Good morning. I wanted to ask Mr. Newby where the AFL-CIO is at in terms of supporting struggling service workers. I'm thinking specifically of Superior Linen workers who are making an effort to organize here in Madison. And, you know, our church had a worker from there talk on our pulpit yesterday, and the story of this man trying to live on under $10 an hour and support a family of four was pretty appalling. And, of course, the health care unaffordability is an issue there. It's particularly ironic when he has no health insurance and when he experienced a needle stick in the course of his work in the laundry, you know, he had no access to health care that he could afford. He could choose to not pay his rent or not pay for food or essentials. You know, that's supporting the base of a health care institution, St. Mary's Hospital and the number of sick homes.
That's right. Well, you bring up a very, very key issue, and thanks to you and to your congregation for giving that worker a platform and the ability to explain to people who often don't understand what low-wage workers are going through. Those workers at Clean Power are trying to organize with the service employees. It's very, very difficult because management has put every obstacle possible in their way. They have fired some of the workers that are the key organizers inside that laundry facility. It's an example of everything that is wrong with our labor relations system today. A lot of our energies are going into organizing service workers and lower paid workers. And we actually had a major breakthrough, a major success with that this past year. And that is that there are about 7,000 child care workers, who many of whom are paid in part by the state, who, through an executive order by Governor Doyle, were essentially put into a bargaining unit that is currently bargaining with the state of Wisconsin. And that's a very exciting development because these people are providing, you know, the care for so many of our kids and yet being paid poverty-level wages and, in most cases, like the laundry worker you were referring to, don't have access to health care. So that's, again, that's a development that we are very pleased about, and it's the kind of progress that we want to see for low-wage workers in general. The other way of doing something about that issue is increasing the minimum wage, which we have done in Wisconsin. It's not nearly where it needs to be. In fact, it doesn't buy as the current minimum wage doesn't buy as much as it did 12, 13 years ago. But that is another one of our legislative agenda goals, both on the state and the national level. We simply have to increase the minimum wage.
That's the one thing Congress did do recently, is it, in terms of the federal minimum wage?
They did, and within a couple of years, they'll bring it up to $7.25 an hour, which is still below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So it's better than it was, but it's nowhere near where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And again, this is an area where we fall so far behind the rest of the world. Ireland, for example, has a minimum wage that is worth $11.25, and yet we think of Ireland as a poor country. It isn't as much of a poor country anymore, but in part it's because they've been taking care of their people and instituting wages that will actually support workers and their families.
Yeah. In terms of organizing efforts, what is union membership growing, status quo, declining in 2007?
It's pretty much holding its own.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't enough. We need to grow. And that is shown up in the fact that even if we keep our current membership levels, as the workforce grows, we become a smaller percentage of the workforce itself. And that's to, and that's to everybody's disadvantage, because union workers have, when you compare them with their counterparts who are non-union, they have higher wages, they have better benefits, they are setting the standards for other workers. And we're just not going to be able to continue to do that if our percentage in the workforce continues to decline. So that's why organizing is key. It's why we are putting so much emphasis on reform legislation nationally that would make it fairer in terms of how people are able to organize, so that instead of having to go through a very, very lengthy election process in which employers have the opportunity to harass workers, in many cases to fire them for their organizing ability, that once workers, more than 50% of workers in an enterprise sign cards saying that they want to have a union, they get it. And they also have a mediated and arbitrated first contract.
Hold that thought. Ken in Clam Lake has been waiting. Hi, Ken, you're on the air.
Yes, and it seems to me that you are getting right to the question I was after. And because I see a clear correlation between the decline of the middle class and average worker wages and also the decline in membership in our unions. And what I'm curious about is, do you think that Free Choice Act that didn't get through Congress last time and we hope will be there next time around would help solve that problem?
Yeah, and we have just less than a minute, actually.
It absolutely would. And it was actually passed by a large majority in the House. It was actually passed with a majority in the Senate, but the Republicans blocked it with a filibuster, and President Bush said that he would veto it. That's why politics is becoming so important for us. It's not the answer to all of our problems, but if we can really change the composition of Congress and the occupant of the White House in November of 2008, we can make real strides for working people, whether they're union or not.
Where are you going today for your Labor Day activities?
I'm off to Racine and Kenosha.
All right. Well, have a good Labor Day. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. It's always a pleasure to be here.
David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, talking with us on this Labor Day, Monday, September the 3rd. We thank him for joining us. We thank Leo Duran for producing The Hour and to Kale Plowman for on-air production. And we thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.